Channel One Right. This is Channel One Right and beginning of a new reel. This is Channel One Right and beginning of a new reel. This is Barbara's tape. This is Barbara's horse tape. This is a general tape. This is family tape. This is Channel One Right of this family tape. This is Channel One Right of this family tape. This is Wednesday, the 15th of October, 69. Wednesday, the 15th of October, 69. I need a little relaxation. I feel like I've been all harnessed up.
Well, you see, that was what Pussy was doing. She was relaxing. She was lying down under that one of the trees out there. And I went out with the shears to her mane. And she decided, well, she couldn't be bothered to get up. So I did her mane while she was lying down. And since she continued, she flopped out flat. Do you know, just complete collapse. Went sound asleep, was snoring like anything. I was beginning to think she was sick, you know.
Yeah.
I finished her mane, and she flopped out, so I decided, well, she's going to have her feet sticking out like that. I'll do her fetlocks. And she was just snoring away, and I was trimming away on her fetlocks. I kept asking again, what if she was sick? I didn't think she was, but she's completely relaxed.
I never heard of anything like that.
And I got her fetlocks about half trimmed in front, on each side. When she decided that she was gonna not get up, but at least, you know, tuck her front feet under her and hold her head up. And so she rolled back, and I couldn't finish her fetlocks because they looked awful. I have to go out and finish them now, standing up.
Well, you haven't finished?
No, they looked terrible. I couldn't get her to get up. She just simply couldn't be bothered.
And you didn't try to persuade her?
Not much. She looked pretty healthy, so I didn't try to persuade her much. She's out there now.
What was Faye telling
me
about this
one? Oh, that.
Yeah.
Well, it's a bunch of exercises that are done to build up confidence and balance. And they include a lot of sort of gymnastics on the horse.
On the horse?
Yeah. You have to see them. I can't explain them to you. You'd have to see them.
Maybe you're not sitting down on a horse.
Well, some of the time. Some of the time, you see, this is why I had to do it on it, to get used to it. Because you do things like, oh, the first one you usually teach a child, for instance, is around the world, where they just put around the world. And they go, just put one leg over at a time so they're sitting sideways and then they're sitting facing the back and on around till they're facing front again. And they get more active than that. So it's just sort of doing, I think probably the most active ones are scissors. You have to sort of throw your legs up and cross them so that you land sitting backwards. Throw your legs up behind you and cross them at the same time so that when you come back down on the horse you're sitting backwards. And then there's another one called twisting where you bring your leg over so that you're sitting sideways. Then put all your weight on your hands so that you come around, you're sitting this way, you twist around so that you're sort of lying over the horse. Although you're supposed not to actually lie down. You're supposed to keep yourself up away from the horse with your arms. And keep your arms straight, not let yourself drop down on the horse. And then you get swing your leg over so that you're sitting back on the horse properly.
And what's the horse doing all that time?
Well, now, see, that's the thing. He can either be walking or trotting or standing still. And Celia swears to me that she's had students do it at a canter. But I've never done it at a canter. But he's not supposed to do anything sort of uneven. He's not supposed to suddenly go trotting off while you're in the middle of one of these things. So I was just getting Pussy used to it. She doesn't mind.
She's cooperative.
Oh, yeah, she doesn't mind that stuff at all.
She doesn't mind anything, does she?
She minds going on the lunge line to the left.
What's the matter with her?
Well, I don't know. I can't figure out whether she's just being stubborn, or whether she just doesn't understand, or whether she's having playing games, or whether it's a combination of all three. But it took me a long time to just get her to walk around the last.
She used to do it. Didn't Faye say?
Well, Faye says she was used to be pretty good to the right.
Oh.
And she didn't give me too much trouble. Last night we had a long session in the dark trying to get her to go to the right. And she did it. And this morning she just went right on. No problem at all. But it took me a long time this morning to get her to walk around to the left. And she still doesn't do it really well, because she's got the idea that she just will stop and turn around and stare at you and go leaping out to the end of the lunch line occasionally.
Well, now, for a while, that's a new wrinkle. Faye had the lunch line and you were on Pussy.
Yeah. Well, so that's what I want to do with the children. Because if they can't hold on to, if you're on a horse and you've got your hands out in front of you and you're holding on to the reins and you've got stirrups and you've got all these helps, it's like when you're standing up and have you ever climbed trees or walked along a fence rail or anything like that? Or a narrow place, and if there was anything within reach, you'd just reach out and touch it, not lean on it, just touch it.
Yeah, that helps you a great deal.
Yeah, just touching it. Well, it's the same with the reins or the stirrups. If you ride with them all the time, they become that touch, and you find that if you have to drop them, you completely lose your balance. If a lot of people, if they lose the stirrups or if the reins, if they have to drop the reins and their horse does anything besides just stand there, completely lose their balance.
That's me. Yes, I would be disturbed.
Yeah.
It is those things that you mentioned.
Yeah. So to build, to make them more secure when they do have them, you take them away. And just,
You control the horse then with the lunge line.
Yeah, I control the horse, and they just have to sit there. Only it becomes harder than that, because once you start trotting out on the lunge line, that can get done, and that's work.
To stay on?
No.
What's work?
Well, you have to sit. You see, you can't do rising trot, or you can do it. But you don't have any stirrups, and you don't have any support.
So just bareback?
Well, I'm going to use, bareback. That's the way I'm going to do it. We used to do it with a saddle, but the effect is the same. You have to relax your back to follow the movement of the horse, so you'll bounce.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awfully hard to relax that much, especially if the horse doesn't have a smooth trot.
Let me, do you mind if we change the subject?
No.
Now, who's the head of your place over there?
The Tilks.
Tilks. Mr. Tilks.
Yeah.
Now, he didn't like to say what to do in a certain situation. He'd want to really approach it for saying what makes a horse do that.
Yeah, that's right.
That right?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, that's a little hard to do.
Well, hard to do if you don't know horses.
Yeah.
But he did. He knew exactly what a horse was thinking. Mr. Tilt believed and taught that what influences the horse is not anything physical. He believes that there exists what he calls a mental aid. Which is, some people have it and some people don't. And some people who don't can become very good by developing it and working on it. But the people who have it naturally are the natural horsemen. And after a year, I'm convinced that I don't have it. But it's an ability to influence the horse. Well, let's put it this way. There was a girl who did have it. One of the children, one of the students who came occasionally, she had her own horses.
And she was young.
Yeah, she was young. She was about 14. And there was a horse that was being just plain lazy with everybody else. Her name was Lucky. And she was the sort of horse that you could use a stick on. You could give her everything you had. And she would still just be... If she decided in her mind that she was going to quit, it didn't mean a thing. She'd just stand there. Or walk. She might walk. That would be about the most you could do. She's the sort of horse that if you were coming into a jump and you felt her slowing down, so you took out your stick and hit her one, she'd stop. That would be it. You'd hit her. You'd insulted her. And she was through. And Melanie could get on this horse. And before she even had finished swinging up, that horse was alive. It was ready. It was going to do anything she wanted it to do. And Mr. Tilk, apparently, when he rode, I never saw him ride, but apparently they said that when he got on a horse, it was the same. By the time he had dropped into the saddle, the horse was, "What do you want me to do?" Now, this is something I know I don't have. It takes me a long time to convince a horse that it's got to do what I want it to do.
Not just instant.
No. It's something I have to work at. Like I did with Pussy this morning. It took me a long time to convince her. And see, the thing about it is, I know that she was playing with me. But I didn't have the strength of character to say, "All right, Pussy, stop it." And make her do it. So I just patiently worked along until she was ready to cooperate with me. But if Mr. Tilk had that horse wouldn't have fooled around like that. It would have been working, and working hard, in no time. And it's not entirely a matter of experience.
Yeah. What do you know? Now, I never, that's all new to me, that part of you. But now, was that the time you were riding the horse and the horse saw something in the field away from there?
Oh, I wasn't riding that horse. He knew from long experience and many other things. So what would bother a horse? If we were, for instance, at a dressage competition, and one of the horses was acting up, or several of the horses were acting up, and just within the immediate area, you couldn't see anything that would be disturbing them. And he would point out that something in a field away was what was disturbing the horses.
Well, Barbara, what could be discovering the horses in a field away.
Well, now the competitions I went to were at shows, the agricultural shows.
Yeah.
And they would have things like, one at Madisonville had greyhound races, and of course that's obviously a disturbance. And they had go-kart races about, about half field, you know, field away. And,
Noisy.
Greyhound, yeah, all the greyhound races were, you know how they are. At least the way they did it was they would have all the dogs boxed at one end. And all the crowd would be at that end, you know. And the minute the dogs were released, they'd yell and scream to get them going. And there were a couple of young horses in the afternoon, but that just sitting right up in the air. The poor animals didn't have a chance.
Yeah, I can see that.
Of course, that's obviously something that would disturb a horse. But,
this morning, you said, had we noticed, seen in our papers about that I threw off on the Arabs.
Yeah.
And you said, asked if we had seen the notices about Arabs in Belgium.
Yeah.
Terrorizing the Israeli airlines. And I said, if I was close to an Arab, I sure want to be on his side. But I couldn't think of a case. And you could. Redo that for me. I want to remember that.
You mean Mr. Taliki?
Mr. Taliki.
Oh, yeah. But he was, I think he was half Pakistani.
Yeah.
He had, his daughter rode out at the tilt. And they bought one of the tilts, school horses, for the daughter. And, he started off the whole thing with a series. The minute the horse became his, the list of demands came. Amanda was not to ride the horse on hacks. She was not to ride the horse. No one was to ride the horse on hacks except Judy or Celia Tilk, who couldn't be bothered to ride a horse like that even if they'd wanted to. The horse could not be used in lessons for other children if Amanda was there. Well, Amanda would come out and she would say, she would ride the horse during the lunch hour, and then she would be through riding it 2 o'clock. She'd say, go ahead and use her. It's all right with me. I don't mind. Jesse needs to work and I can't work her that much. And then she would go home and say, I only rode Jess so much today because they were using her in the lesson. And next week, Mr. Taliki would come charging out. You've been using Jess in the lesson. Yes, well, Amanda said we could. Well, he got madder and madder. He came charging out one day. And this had reached sort of a point where he had issued strict orders that the horse was not to be used. And the horse had been used, and, well, for 2 weeks, he had issued these orders, and then Amanda had gone away on holiday for 2 weeks. So we'd used the horse on weekends. And the following weekend, she came, rode the horse, and said we could use it in lessons. And about that time, she didn't come, that's it. She didn't come till late in the afternoon, she came late. And we'd already used the horse in a lesson, and the horse was going into a lesson when the Talikis arrived. And Mr. Taliki was furious. And Judy had to go in and teach the lesson, so he cornered Celia in the middle of the yard in front of all the clients and began dressing her up now because this horse was being used. And he was shouting up and down about how the horse was not to be used, and she said, "Well, Mr. Taliki, what am I to do? Your daughter says that we can use the horse. Who am I to believe?" And he says, "You're to believe me. I'm the adult." And Susan says, "Very well. We won't use the horse." And what she meant was they wouldn't use it at all. Which would they get credit? They used to get credits against their account. It would save them money if the horse were used. Well, about a week later, he called, and I took the phone call, and he said, "Tell Judy that I am taking the horse away Saturday." "Yes, sir, Mr. Taliki." And so Saturday, he took the horse away, and we all got in our little confab and laid bets to see how long it would be before he called to ask if he could bring it back. Because Jessie was the sort of horse that you can't catch once she finds out that she can get away with it. And what's more, she was the kind of horse that if she didn't get enough work, she was more horse than Amanda could handle. She used to cart Amanda all over the fields when she was being worked 2 hours a day every day. And we could just see what was going to happen when Amanda could only work her in weekends. And sure enough, in about 2-3 weeks, Mr. Taliki called back and says, "Can we bring Jess back?" And Judy was talking to him. She says, "No, you can't bring the horse back." "Well, why not?" "Because you took the horse away, so we've got something to take its place. Then we don't have any room for it." "And, well, when can I bring it back?" "You can bring it back in the fall, if you'll let us use it. But only if you'll let us use it." "So I guess you'll bring it back in the fall. But in the meantime, it's having a lovely summer." Because Amanda can't catch it to ride it.
Well, now, how would you like to be neighbors to a whole nation, you see?
No, thank you.
Well, in my mind, a good part of the world is made up of peppery people like that. All the Latin Americans. Oh, they are peppery. Oh, they are so peppery.
Yeah. It's so difficult to deal with somebody like that. Judy had her way, and it worked. She knew that horse would be back in the fall. But
you know, some of the nicest people I ever saw are the Lebanese. I think they're Arabs, I'm not sure. Lebanese. I had a girl in class from Lebanon, and she was one of the finest children I ever saw. She was beautiful and smart and just as tractable, easy to work with as you ever saw. And I think that's they all are. They are not.
Most of them I've met.
Huh?
I've met. There's several that are members of our church in Greensboro.
Lebanese.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
They.
They're not sure if. What is the word?
Hmm.
Mercurial or something.
No, they're very even tempered. I think it's with Gabriel or something like that. A Lebanese. And they're a wonderful family.
Any new things about Mr. Franklin?
New things about Mr. Franklin. You want me to say that, right? Monday morning after breakfast, October 20th,
1969.
Then again. Monday morning after breakfast, October 20th, 1969. Monday morning after breakfast, October 20th, 1969. Well, Missy's just she's just not happy. I don't think she really appreciates that box we built for her. I put her in there last night and gave her some hay and water. And first thing she did was to go to the very back and talk to Miss Molly. Miss Molly was worried. Miss Molly was very worried. And she'd reach her head all around the barbed wire and around the corner.
Oh, that neck will stretch.
It stretches. When Missy's stretching the other way as well. It's and they talked and flicked ears at each other, and Molly worried a bit and finally wandered off.
Yeah.
And I went on back there later, and Missy's hadn't touched her hay, wasn't interested in it. And I went down this morning to check on her, and she was looking sort of mournful over the top of the gate, like it was prison bars or something. And you never saw a horse look quite so surprised when I opened it. I don't think she realized that gate would open. And she was happy. She had to talk to me then. She wouldn't talk to me last night. She talked to me this morning.
Oh, when you opened the gate?
Yeah, when I opened the gate. But she hadn't touched her water. She hadn't touched her hay all night. I don't know whether she'd lain down or not. Couldn't figure out.
A hay is right stemmy.
Yeah, it's too old and it's gotten stalky. But she's off her appetite anyway, because she has.
Now, there's that breakfast this Monday morning, the 20th of October, 69. There's that breakfast. It's 20th of October, Monday, 1969. Tell me about those feet again, the cracks.
Lamentation. Well, it's just like plywood. Only, as I say, they all go one way.
Uh-huh.
And you know how plywood, if you leave it out in the weather,
uh-huh.
Eventually it'll start peeling up at the...
Yes.
It's exactly the same with these feet.
But plywood goes crossways.
Yes. And they all go the same way, you see.
Well, that's curious, isn't it?
Yeah. And, as I say, the Florida weather is tough on horses. Because the dry season, they get awfully hard and dry, and they'll crack with the... Now, those are the worst cracks, is when it cracks through this hardness, this dryness.
Mm-hmm.
But this, I never worry much when it's wet weather like this, and people tell me they're cracked up to the coronet band. I don't worry.
Miss Howard, let me tell you, you know, I've got to go into town and do a little work, and they're going to want to talk with you.
Yes.
Well, I'm not going to talk
just
home.
A
because
just a minute.
Just
I've
got to dash
how
down.
Much I owe you?
$3.
And you make a date with Guy and Barbara now sometime, so we'll be sure to be here.
Yeah. Well, I'll make it.
You're going to adopt us, aren't you?
I'll adopt you, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Now, I never saw anything like that instrument you use.
That
rasp.
That actually is a wood rasp.
Oh, it is?
Oh, yes. You can buy them at any of these hardware stores. I've been using one of those for about 8 years. And there's only about two of us use them, and I find them very nice.
Well, I don't mean the second one. I mean that first one.
The first one, yes. Well, the second one's a standard rasp, but the first one is a wood rasp.
Oh, really?
And you can get those... half round, like a little plane.
Yeah.
And you can get those with that same type of blade as that. In a plane. And they're really nice.
Mm-hmm.
They make a nice job on wood.
Oh, I never saw anything like, on wood.
Oh, yeah. Of course, they make a nice job on the feet. And they're so much lighter than the others.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes I'm only one of those from 7:30 in the morning to 4:30 at night. And that difference in weight makes a difference. Especially when you get my age.
I didn't think anybody can do as many horses as you said, spoke of, in one half day.
I average 450 a month.
Lord.
Oh, you can understand, I mean, you know, that you're busy 90% of the time.
Yeah.
I haven't even had a vacation this year.
Yeah.
But when I first came down here, I've been down here 11 years. I was up in New York State, shooting on the track up there. And then the beginning of January, it used to slacken off till about June, because most of the training horses, what the yearlings, what they were bred down here, was for the sale, specifically for the sale. And after the sale horse was gone, well, you lost, an average of about 80 horses, you see, which was the shoeing. And so he was slow then till they started with the babies, which we start with at 3 months old. Well, the babies start coming about late January till June. So by June, you're sort of back again where you was. You've got the 80 babies you're doing and all ready for the next year. That's how it is. It's a sort of a cycle. But now they're training all year round, instead of only, like, there's training barns that train horses for people from outside.
Oh, yeah.
Now, these people, as I say, Diamond Sea Farm on Route 40, they train 150 a year.
Oh.
Outside horses, you see. Plus, those are boarders, like. They're shipped in from Kentucky, all over the country, to train down in Florida.
Oh.
Because there's better training facilities down in Florida. Well, not facilities, but better weather. You see, up north in Kentucky and that, they start training the horses in the frost and the snow comes, they can't take the horses up. And therefore, they're held up 2 or 3 weeks. Now, down in Florida, they can train them every day. Like with the babies now, it's a good place for breeding babies, because you can turn them out a day old, and you can say they can be out every day of the year.
You know, I didn't realize that. That would make a difference.
Oh, it makes a big difference.
It would stimulate the youth farm, wouldn't it?
Yes, that is the only thing we've got to offer down here, though, is the weather. The soil, the grass. There's not a patch on Kentucky grass.
Do they bring their own feed?
No. But a lot of the hay that they have at these farms is imported from Kentucky and northern hay, much better than the southern hay.
Oh, the hay down here. I've raised hay myself. And what, you know, when you get into it yourself, you see it a little bit more closely.
Mm.
And you get some right miserable hay.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you get hay down here, you can't even smell it.
No. Oh, no. I mean, when I started smelling the air, you know, down there, I wondered where it was, you know, what it was. Because in England, we have some beautiful hay. Mm-hmm. And we're not like you are in this country. We don't bale it and use it straight away. We stack it, put it in a stack. Not know if you've ever seen a hay stack.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I've made them, yeah.
Yeah. And we would leave that for 12 months before we even cut open to it. And let it mature.
Is that right?
And, oh boy, that was heavy.
Is that right?
It smelled good.
We used to cut it and lay it. Mm-hmm. And then we'd turn it and cock it and turn it. And eventually it was perfectly, it had to be dry before you could stack it. Because
yeah.
If you didn't, if it was stacked damp.
Oh.
You would have internal combustion and fire. I mean, that has happened a few times, but not too often. But then when you cut that hay open, boy, that was the smell. It used to feed you itself. And it used to feed the horses the smell of it, because it was so good.
Mm-hmm. I never heard of anything like that. Just simply never heard of it.
Mm. Well, we used to stack it. And as I say, they'd have about 3 or 4 stacks in the field, and that would be last year, so they'd cut into that and leave this till next year.
Mm-hmm. I tell you, excuse me.
Is that the metal hay? Is that the metal hay you use?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, I used to love to work at it. I used to love to be out in the hay field, not working, but be out in it.
Yeah. The trouble with hay down here is it rains and you can't get into it. And it stands there,
yeah,
and it looks good, but it gets so stimmy.
But you know, the trouble is, it's too fast, it's fast growing.
Yeah.
And there's no depth of soil. I mean, there's no depth of, there's no good topsoil. I mean,
yeah.
3 inches down in your, down in the old sand. And of course, you don't use the fertilizer. The old fertilizer used to be the manure.
Oh.
All this chemical. But we used to have some beautiful, and we used to have one particular egg over there, Lincolnshire clover. And you could feed horses nothing else but that, and they would grow. And
yeah. Is that like anything we have?
No, no, you've nothing like it. It's beautiful stuff.
You've seen the Alice clover?
Yeah. But the thing is, the packing of it, the stacking of it, used to, I don't know, it seems to put body in it. There's no body in your egg, not a scrap of body in it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I feel about it. It's just fibrous, just like fibers. Mm-hmm. But their egg was, I mean, it was solid.
Well, you know he's right, guy.
Did you feed some of that?
Yeah, I fed some of that.
Isn't that egg something out of this world?
Mm-hmm.
We had a barn. We put 12-month-old meadow hay. And got, when we got through stacking, you could just go within. It was bale, but it had been stacked 12 months.
Yeah.
And we had, you know, they had a bad season, and the hay we'd gotten before that was terrible.
Oh, you, I mean, of course we do have bad seasons, and then again, as I say, some of this hay is brought in before it's dry. But that's one thing about England you can't do like you can do in Florida, cut it and bale at the same time, because you've got to dry it out. But, oh, don't misunderstand me. I mean, there's some bad hay gets in at times, but mostly there's some good hay there. Where was you at in England?
Stratford.
Stratford?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, Stratford-on-Avon. That's a beautiful place. Did you ever get out to Morton the Marsh?
Yeah, a couple of times.
You did?
Louder.
I used to live there.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Really? Well, were you blacksmithing there?
I've done nothing else all my life. Never done anything else on a blacksmith.
Yeah. Yeah.
52 years of it. But, there's some beautiful horse farms around Morton in the Market. I don't know whether you ever went to see any of them. Did you?
No. I didn't see them. I know there's some good fine places.
Mm-hmm. And I've seen three ants assemble in the square at Morton in the Marsh. Over 100 horses and 3 packs of hounds.
Really? What packs?
The Cotswold and the Evesham. I just forget what the other one was.
That's called the Cotswold. That's a good hut.
Yeah. I used to know the 3 of the ex-masters of that. There's Mr. Pilkington, and Lord Ashton and Colonel Maxwell used to queue for them.
Uh-huh. Mr. Pilkington, that's
what?
Is that Major Pilkington? Or is that
Well, Pilkington, I don't know. No, I don't think he was an army man. There was a lot of army men around there, but I don't think he was never referred to as his army.
Mm-hmm.
It was always referred to as Mr. Pilkington. Now, I'll tell you what who he was. He's the biggest glass manufacturer there is, in the world.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. He's a bit eccentric. Well, I'll tell you,
he must be getting on in years now, because it's a long time since I was there. But I remember the time I went. I was working for another guy at the time, just took a fancy to this little place to stay there for a while, and this man took me around to introduce me to him. So he said, "Dory, Mr. Pilkington," he says, "I knew a blacksmith." So I said, oh, he said, well, he said, I'm pleased to meet you. He said, and if you do anything wrong, he said, I'll give you a damn good cursing. So I just looked at him. I said, Mr. Pilkington, I said, I know all the words. I said, and I'll give you just as good as I take. Oh, he said, I can see you and I are going to get on well. I said, well, that's entirely up to you. I said, because I said, I'm not particular. I said, I can leave here any time. But that was one little snag you run up against there. You know, in England, a blacksmith, if he starts for a firm, he would go through that, be there all his life, and his father, his sons, and that. They didn't change blacksmiths like they do down here.
Yeah.
And you'd be assured of that business all your life. And this man, he got more work than money, that's why he took me down. I only went in temporarily. I was in there I went in for 6 months and I stayed there 3 years. And that was the thing I come up against more than anything there, was this bigotry, because they had the Claytons suing them for them for generations, and they didn't think anybody else could sue under the Claytons.
Really?
And he was the last of their line. His son wasn't taking it up, and in fact that was one reason why I went there. I was thinking of settling there and taking the job, taking the business over of him, because it was a nice, it was a beautiful, beautiful country.
Yeah.
And, you go, I don't know about whether you can shoe my horses or not. I've let Clayton shoe them all. I used to say, well, what are you going to do with anything up to Clayton? You going to shoot all your horses? You get a point there. But they was hard to get on with. And there was a lot of military people there, colonels, generals, majors, and they used to try and come the old soldier business, you know.
Yeah.
An old general come one day, he started this, that, and the other, I was about half an hour late. And I said, you know, I said, general, I said, you know, I said, I'm not one of your army men. I said, I'm not ninepence a day, man. That's all the army was getting in those days, ninepence a day.
Yeah.
I said, I could walk out of here. I said, you don't have to come back. I said, so I said, just forget that army business.
That's hard for him to do, wasn't it?
Oh, it was. Mm.
Yeah.
But it was just certain time to try and ride the eye off him.
Yeah.
Now, his wife was a wonderful person. He was an Irish general.
Yeah. When do you start working on the little horses, the colts?
3 months old.
3 months old. Mm. What do you do, just trim them?
Just trim the feet.
Nothing wrong with them.
Oh, there is, yes. That is the one time that they really like you to start on, because very few of these thoroughbreds are born straight. They either toe in, toe out, or over, and you've got to see that the feet are kept really level.
Oh.
Because they're so tender and so thin that they grow out of shape and soon twist, they go eye on outside or twist iron claw inside, or get short at the toe, they'll throw them over. That is the most critical time for these babies.
Oh.
For the horse, anyhow. Now, you don't get the same trouble with a cold blood.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the... Because the thing is with a standard bred, he's so finely bred that it's like everything else is finely bred.
Yeah.
He's not as robust.
Yeah.
Not as hard, you know.
Well, what is the attraction of working with thoroughbreds? The people that own them sort of apologize for them. All they can do is get started and run fast.
How do you mean apologize? I think the racehorse is one of the most intelligent horses in the whole field. Absolutely one of the most intelligent.
Thoroughbred?
Yes. I know I shouldn't say this in front of everybody, but I do think that. And I've handled every kind of horse there is in the world. But a thoroughbred is an I think it's an IQ, really, compared with some of these I mean, these old cold bloods will take anything, but a racehorse won't.
Yeah.
I mean, he'll rebel if he thinks he's getting no treaty, but you've seen some of the cold bloods they've got unmercifully, you know, and brutally treated, and yet they just do what they're told to do.
Yeah. Don't hold it against you.
No.
As Pilkington he was talking about, I knew his son. We figured it. We stood out there and figured it out whether it was the same one or his son. And we figured it must be his son. And he kept a horse at Tilts, a hunter, and he would go out and hunt. He used to be devoted to it. He'd just hunt all the time. But by the time I knew him, he only had one lung left. And he would go out, he would say he was going to a meet, and then he wouldn't go. Or he would go, and he wouldn't hunt. He'd just walk up and down and talk to all the people before the hunt, and then he'd come home. He decided it was too foggy or too wet or too something, he wouldn't go. It's probably just as well, because the sight of him on a horse in his condition galloping across the country would have been terrifying. he was your English eccentric guy.
Yeah.
He was a marvelous person. I really enjoyed it. He was one of these people who would talk. He never talked much to me, but he would talk. Mr. Tilk used to come back as with the tales of Major Pilkington. You'd go with him to a hunt. Mr. Tilk would drive the trailer, and Pilky would be sitting beside him, and he'd talk about the country you were going through. He'd say, now that manor, that house over there used to be the manor house of so-and-so. Give complete history, everything, all along the way. Now that copse of woods is such and such a copse. It was used to be good fox hunting there. He'd go all the way along to the hunt this way. Then when you picked him up and came back, he'd say, now what's that house? I expect you to tell him.
Oh.
What's the name of that copse of woods over there?
Yeah.
Expect you to know it all.
He'd quiz you.
He'd tell you going out, and on the way back he'd quiz you.
Yeah.
he was fun. He dressed he was tall, he was thin. Tall, thin man. He'd wear, what do you call it?
Right.
Comes down to the knee and, stops the knee, and then he wears socks and heavy walking shoes. Used to be little boys' wear. I can't remember what you call them now. He had an old tattered tweed coat and vest. And what he called a coat, which I swear must have been his granddaddy's dressing gown, smoking jacket or something, I don't know, dressing gown. And he was a sight coming down the yard, I tell you. But he'd catch you. I answered the phone one time and I said, standard opening. Windmill Hill Riding Academy, may I help you? No, you can help me. Very brusque. I said, yes, sir, what can I do? No, I can help you, is what it was. I messed up my key line. I can help you. All right. And then he would tell you whether he was coming hunting or not. The trouble is, he'd wait until after you'd already gotten the horse ready to do it. He'd wait until you had done all the work, and then he'd call. But Mr. Tilt used to talk about him, you know, and he'd tell wild tales. One time, one of his horses, he used to keep two or three horses out there. And he'd had this horse that had vet bills, And Mr. Tilk had gone ahead and charged him the extra charge for taking care of a sick horse as well. And Major Pilkington came to go over the bill with him. And he went down the bill and he'd go Saturday, October the 24th, went a hunt. Now that was at such and such place, and he'd give a whole story of the hunt. He'd go down the bill, he'd skip over the bill, didn't even see him. Went clear through the bill, and he told them about every hunt, whether it was a good hunt or not, where they found the fox, and how far he ran, how many hours run they had, whether they made a kill or not. Not one word about those enormous veterinary bills on that thing. Not even mentioned. He was a gentleman. He wasn't concerned. And when he paid his bills, if it was pounds and shillings and pence, the pence were never paid.
Yeah.
gentlemen, this used to be the custom, you see. The gentleman dropped the pence.
Yeah.
And he would never pay the pence. His check always came in round numbers.
Yeah.
But he was good fun.
Yeah.
So you knew him mostly through Mr. Tilk.
Yeah. Well, I had a few run-ins with him, but not so much. See, I wasn't grooming his horse. He. First time I met him, he was in this Tilk's office, and I was looking for Judy, and Judy's office was right next to Mr. Tilk. And I went charging in there, and at the same time I was having to give instructions to somebody else about what to do with a horse, and I was shouting across the yard. And he poked his head around the door and said something about, "Are you looking for the master?" or something like that. The master to Tilk. I said, "Well, no, I was looking for Judy." And then when he came out of the office, he said something about, "Where are you going, noisy one?" And if he paid you with a name like that, if he recognized you again, he'd probably call you that for the rest of the time. He wouldn't bother with it. Whatever he called you. And there's one thing about him. He could be awfully curt, and he'd take a lot of people by surprise because they didn't know how to take him. You know, they weren't sure of it. Because he would speak quickly and sharply, and he wanted things done his way. But one of the things Mr. Tilk was always impressed with was the way he rode. See, the horse he used, we used in the school. And that horse would throw its head around and just always throwing its head. But it never would do it with Major Pilkington. And he rode like a polo player. He played polo when he was young. And he would just take the reins, have his hand out at the end of the reins with a double bridle, and that horse would do everything without moving its head. And he'd do polo turns on him, and if he carried a riding stick, and he always was using it like a polo stick, you know. If he was, he'd be swinging his arm around or something like that all the time he was riding. It was just habit. But Spangles never minded. Spangles would keep his head still when Major Pilkington was riding. And he looked sort of rough on a horse because, you know, the style of riding. But he was always concerned about his horses. He had it's another part of him that seems so typically English through my eyes. And this is one of the things that always impressed Mr. Tilt. Because he would go out hunting all day, but he would never think of coming back from a hunt without stopping at a water hole for his horse to drink, without loosening the girths and walking and doing all these things that to ease the horse's comfort. And when he got back, he would be exhausted because he was not in good health. But before he would go down and with the girl who was grooming, and he'd watch her take care of his horse, check, make sure it was all right. And he'd go up to the house, to the tilt, and have a cup of coffee and sit and talk. But before he left, he would go back down to see that his horse was all right. Always. And he could be just as cavalier with people, just really make a person feel bad, but he would always be good to his horse.
Yeah. Well, how do you figure he would be cavalier with people?
Well, it was sort of these people who, by his very attitude, could cow you. He was brusque, and he was so used to having to, so you could almost feel that he expected you to do what he said, and not to say anything, but just go do it, and not to be in his way when he didn't want you there, but to be there when he did, just like that, you know, suddenly appear from out of nowhere if he needed you, but otherwise to disappear. And it's frightening. You almost comply to it because you're so taken aback by it. You feel you have to sort of fit in.
Well, you actually saw a good bit of him then, didn't you?
Not all that much. He was one of those people we talked about a lot. I saw him fairly often, because after all, he did have a horse there. And he said he was going to hunt just about every week, and so he would make an appearance during the hunting season.
Well, you saw him through the talk then.
A lot of it, yeah. So Mr. Tilt was
talking. I think that's right. You ought to see people like that through the talk. Mainly through Mr. Tilt's talk.
Yeah, pretty much through Mr. Tilt's talk.
You did fine?
I said I spend a lot of time leaning forward like this, and it didn't seem to help.
You don't realize how much volume, you see, chest, it's chest, that you get into your voice. It's how much you get into your voice, you get it. Now, in music, you see, in an orchestra, it fills auditorium, and there's no doubt about, you know, it registers.
Believe it, that was Frank. This little bitty pygmy got out of the car, and I thought to myself, he couldn't hold a horse's foot up, much less turn it. And Bob was out there talking with him. I went on out. Was the telephone conversation with the head groomsman down there.
Yeah.
And I called, and Mrs. Davis answered the telephone. And I said, is your farrier there? And she said she had waked up this morning with a sick stomach. And she didn't know who was there. And anyway, she wouldn't know because he would go straight up to the barn. But if I'd hang up, ring again, she'd let the call go through to the barn. And that's what I did. And this fella, head groomsman, answered telephone. And I said, is your farrier there? And he said, no. I said, is Mr. Howarth there? I said, Howarth. He said, no, I don't never heard of him. And I tried again, and I said, is your blacksmith there? He said, no, we haven't got any blacksmith there. I said, well, somebody's there to fix it to work on the horses. He told me he'd be there from 7 o'clock till 9. Oh, he said, you mean Frank?
He missed his teeter talk, as I call him. Now he missed that.
Kyle missed it too. They want you to come up and call, come out and sit down and talk to them. I don't know if they actually miss it. If they like it.
Well, this time next week, Dad'll be down here, I hope.
Or this soon? He's coming on down. Well, the weather gets cool.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Well, that'd be fine. Then you can see a little green countryside. And it's still green. You know it's supposed to be brown, but now dried out, weeds, you know.
I want him to see those pastures out there.
Oh, I want him to see too. They're beautiful.
I wish
we
could
have
got
the grass in this middle pasture, because it's pretty.
I wish we could have got that far pasture cut down there where it's all been.
Mm-hmm.
I do. I just like this out here.
Yeah, that's not doing really good. I can't get the cows up there. I keep doing the horses.
We ought to cut it then and get it off of there. Bail it up and get it off of there. There's enough indigo there to give all of that a flavor. To bail it when it's before it gets too dry. But it'd still give it all the flavor and they'd eat it. They'd eat every bit of it.
Straight on rye. Oh, that'd be pretty in rye.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man. That'll make Nellie Gray so fat she won't know what it is. She'll taste that much rye.
I'm going to take old Nellie home and give her another course of vitamins, I think.
B12?
No. I buy this blood builder, the tonic. A quart costs $7.50.
Oh.
Yeah.
And you give her 2 ounces of feed.
Oh.
And I give her that wheat germ oil.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I can give that to all my horses.
Oh.
Every so often.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you give it to them, they ought to have it every day. She ought to have it every day.
No. Twice a week is all you're supposed to give that wheat germ.
That is wheat germ.
Once a day.
Stall up there where she could stand there and eat.
Once a day is all to give the blood builder.
Mm-hmm.
The best place to put that is right there on the lane. Just
mm-hmm.
in some little short stalls up there.
That's right.
You can Well, you can reach it. You see, they can go in there, and you can feed them from the lane. You can put the halter on them and make them hay. All that little filly was burning the wind a while ago. That
I
circle gets wider and wider. You know?
Wider all the time, huh?
Mm-hmm. I haven't seen her. Watched her now in about a week.
She's going.
I'm going to put a halter on her this weekend.
Oh.
Leather halter.
A leather halter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Leave it on her. Mm-hmm. Then when I want to go get her, I can go get her.
Her baby days. They're fast and that. Somebody comes.